Okay, so we spent time discussing the case of Sfina Ze and Yayin Ze. That's where the issue of prepayment came up, and the rule was wherever the money is, that's where it stays. The agenda for today is to discuss the case of Sfina Stam, Yayin Stam, where the Gemara tells us that the rule is Cholkim. They split the fare, meaning each party, I guess, gets the party who was providing the service gets half his wages or half the rent, and the payer gets a 50% discount. And the interesting question for us is why there should be this difference between the Stam case, where the rule is Yachloku, and the Zuzek case, where the rule is leave the money where it is. Im Nasan Lo Yitol, Ve'im Lo Nasan Lo Yitain. So here are some formulations in the Rishonim trying to explain the difference. You get the riff, I've started to become like more sensitive. It's always good to look at where things come from in the riff. I think it's like very much underappreciated in like Litvish circles. Like no one goes back to look at to see what the riff has to say, or very rarely do we. We kind of just like look more to the Rishonim commenting on the daf. Since Cole is very into Chaim Soloveitchik these days, I'll just mention that he thought like the biggest tema, the thing he never understood, was how the Rimi Gash and the Rambam spoke so reverently about the Rif. It's like, you know, you read the Rif, you don't see the godless. But like when you read the Rambam and the Rimi Gash, they speak Be'ema of Ereses of Isaiah about the Rif. But you know, if you read the Rif more carefully, you see that there are like some, you know, interesting explanations and important distinctions there. So the riff in remind me later to tell you about my story with Dr. Berger and the riff. So the riff in Bamitzian Mem Tesmet Aleph here says Sfina Stam Yain Stam Hainu Taima Dechulkin. Here's the reason why you split it. Let me just make this larger for the far-sighted amongst us. The reason why you split it is because the Baal HaSfina Matzi Amar Le LeBaal HaYayin Hav Yena Da'ana Ma'isina Sfinta. The Baal HaYayin Matzi Amar LeBaal HaSfina Hav Sfinta Da'ana Ma'isina Chamra. The Kivin Da'haylo Ma'isi Sfinta V'haylo Ma'isi Chamra Havalu Mili Ditu Shkili Kehadadi V'cholken. So what do you guys think is the underlying point here in the riff? Why is it that they're splitting it? Maybe we should ask Yakir, because we know Yakir has already a theory about this. Oh, we can't hear you, Yakir. Oh, I think the problem is that you just have your earplugs in, but maybe there's no microphone. It's okay. We'll hold off on Yakir. Let's see, I don't know if you could fix that. There's like a way to check which microphone you're using, if it's your computer's microphone. Yeah. So I think this is maybe getting at the idea of Yakir's equilibrium that he mentioned earlier in his email that he sent out. Look, both parties could say to the other, I'm ready to move forward when you are. Right, havli yena na maisina svinta, and havli svinta na maisina chamra. Once you know, if you're ready to go forward, I'm ready to go forward, but neither party actually moves forward. Right, hailo maisi svinta and hailo maisi chamra. It's a stam case. So basically, we're just stuck at this equilibrium where both parties can go forward, but both parties have this right to say, I'm not going to go forward until you go forward. And so we're stuck in this interim deadlock. And so the rule is when they're just deadlocked like this, Cholkin, they split the money.
I find that a little unsatisfying that it's the result of this like game of legal chicken, basically. Like,
yeah.
Why should, in other words, it seems weak. So in the Zo Stam case, the Stam party, what he's saying is, you know, I'm ready to fulfill. He's saying what you just said is correct. The solution should be that they're both obligated to deliver, not that they're both permitted to remain.
Right. Well, it's
inactive.
Right. So, yeah, I think it's a nice way to put it. It is this kind of legal game of chicken where each party has the threat that they're willing to move forward. And Cole, you're saying that what? The rule here should be not yachloku, but...
It should be... let me ask you something. Why does there have to be a ruling in this case? What is it about the... You know, what is it about this case that demands a... I would say the natural solution to this is not chulkim. It's like... it's nothing.
Right, leave the money where it is.
Leave it... Just like everybody can... you know, nobody's disabled. In the other three cases, there's somebody who can no longer fulfill his half of the contract.
Right.
Right? Because they're locked into a zoo. And so a new league and which calls for the intervention of the court, because one party says, you know, well, I can do my half, but he can't do his half. He's failing. I want satisfaction.
Right. Well, I think Akir's point was that here there really is no intervention of the court almost. It's almost like a prudential equilibrium where the parties just realize it's rational for them to split it rather than, you know, having to actually go through with performance of something that no one wants performed.
I guess that underdetermines why that if what you're saying might be true, it just doesn't explain why it requires any kind of remedy. In other words, Yakir is saying that what the sock of Chulkim is an interpretation of what the parties believe themselves. Why isn't it the desire of the parties to go through?
Yeah, it's a good point. Contract? I agree with you. I agree with you that everything here makes sense except for the outcome of Yachloku.
Right. Everything, the explanation is beautiful. It's the right.
Why should that result explain
that doesn't right? That doesn't work out.
Right, right. Let's hear from Zolt and then Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I'd add to Coral's point, which is also that the thing I have a problem with Akir's theory is that it's not so evident that if necessarily they'd want to go through with it. Like, it might still be more work to bring another boat, bring more wine. They might prefer, like, I'd rather, you know, pay the money or not get the money and not fulfill the deal. It's not, like, obviously that's for sure they would like, hold out their part of the deal. So, like, I'm not even sure the equilibrium theory works entirely in this context.
Yeah. I think that your point is what the point that Rishonim are making in the next sources. Let me just guide you. I'll just guide us through them for a second, then we'll take Adam. Or then Yoni could follow up first, even. The Rush in Vav Metzia, Vav Yud Aleph, he basically quotes the Rif. You know, and the Rush generally is grounded in the Rif. He says, Umiyu, so he says, that's why they're even, that's why you're the Chulkin. Umiyu, kol achar mehem shehevi eshalo v'chaveiro lo hevi, yafzid. Right? It's quite plausible that the parties won't end up at this kind of equilibrium, because kol achan mehem shehevi eshalo v'chaveru lo hevi yafsid. Actually, any of the parties in a stam case could actually make good on his threat and argue that he wants to move forward. V'cholkim dika amar hacha haynu hecha d'shum achan mehem lo kiyem tano. The only time we actually arrive at Chulkim is when neither party is willing to make good on their threat to say, let's move forward. To actually move forward. The Ein Hamuchzak Yochal Lomar Lechaveiro Ad Shetavi Eshelcha Yishar Hadavar Ki Kodem. So here I think the Rush is addressing Cole's concern, right? Why don't we just leave things as is? Let the Muchzak hold on to things. So the Rush says the Muchzak can't do that. He can't say ad shetavi eshelcha yishar hadavar ki kodem shetavi eshelcha ein li l'shalim dematzi idach lemeimar ad shelo tavi eshelcha ein alai lahavi esheli she'eni ma'amincha shetavi eshelcha v'nimtzesi toreach u'mafsin ma'osai b'chinam. So you see, the Rush imagines this as a hypothetical back and forth between the parties, where let's say, you know, let's say Yoni's the muchzak, so he's the boat owner and I paid him, or let's say Yoni's the passenger and I'm the boat owner, and Yoni, and you know, the boat goes down, and Yoni says, hey, once you bring your boat, I'm happy to bring more wine. And I say, no, I'm waiting for you to bring your wine until I bring my boat. And the Rush says there's no principled reason to think that the muchzak has the upper hand to force the other party to make the first move, because the other party has this response, this defense of saying, like, hey, I don't trust you. So, like, there's no reason why I should have to make the first move rather than you. So I think that his answer to Cole's question is that muchzaka shouldn't matter here, because muchzaka shouldn't bear on which party has to make the first move in moving forward with the agreement. Cole, you wanted to say something?
Yeah. I want to preempt any desire to any attempt to jam the Rush into the equilibrium view that the court's here. So what the Rush is saying here is basically, so you have the ship sinks. Neither party is holding anything up in a way that they're at fault for, because both parties said stum, but each party's making good on the contract requires something supererogatory, namely the provision of the expenditure of labor without any guarantee that the other party will make good.
Right,
and the point is that that's an unjust burden to impose on either side. And so you're at this legal standstill where neither party can extract anything from the other, either in terms of remedy or as a result of fault, or in terms of performance in order to get the relationship going. And so the only just solution is to split it down the middle.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it, Cole. I would just say the one thing that I think might work against your reading or your attempt to extricate us from the Foremanian equilibrium. That's Yakir's last name, by the way, in case anybody didn't know.
Foreman. Oh, okay, Foremanian equilibrium.
It's the
Foreman Nash theory.
I was going to say, right, the Yakirian equilibrium doesn't sound as good, you know. The Foreman equilibrium then, right? I think it's, and as opposed to Cole's just like the legal rule, it's like a legal stalemate. I think it's the fact that he says, Kol achad mehem shehevi eshelo, b'chaver lo hevi yafsid. Right? Once one party does make the move to, you know, undertake the legal expense to move forward, then that party does win. So I think that does suggest to me that there's more of an equilibrium going on here rather than just like a halachic psak of yachloku. Okay, let's take the hands. Zolti, did you want to follow up still on your old hand?
Yeah, I was just going to add that I think the riff is appealing to something slightly different than the equilibrium theory. I think it's appealing to some type of theory of them being equal positions, and the only way for fair resolution of total equality is to split it.
But remember that in the Yayins, in Zezu, they're also equal in a certain way, no?
Right, well, it's equal. I guess it's equality. It seems to be equality that's where they could fulfill it. Equal positions. I mean, I think this is...
Well, that's my point. My point is that it seems...
arguing a while ago, which is that, in the case where, we appeal to a similar case of the Schneimos and Talit, where both people could fulfill, could grab the whole Talit. So there they split it because they're in equal position to grab the whole thing.
Right. Not all.
I think that's a similar type of logical reasoning.
Not all equality is equal.
As opposed to saying a case where neither can fulfill it, then they're also equal. But since neither can fulfill it, they're not gonna get the same rules.
Yeah, I could hear that. Except my only reservation is that I think what separates the two different kinds of equality here seems to be whether we've reached a rational equilibrium, where it's reasonable for the parties to keep it here, or whether they're just merely equal with not having reached this equilibrium, right? It's like an equality where, like, both parties are at fault for not going forward.
Sure, I'm not particularly beholden to like any particular theory of why this equilibrium is different than the other one.
Right.
I'm just saying. I'm just pointing out the rift seems to be clearly arguing that this is just in an equilibrium state.
Gotcha.
Not Yakir's equilibrium.
Right. Gotcha. Adam, we have a hand, and then we have a hand from Yair, who's now, we'll find out where he is when we get to him. Adam, you're muted.
Yeah, I tried to do the space bar, but then apparently my cursor was in something else, so I just added lost spaces to document instead of a meeting link. So just two things. Firstly, Yuvash is discussing a potential of this type of debate, not really the actuality of it.
Correct. It's hypothetical.
This hypothetical power is what forces this Hulkin. But if that's the case,
it's like the then, it's like the Rawlsian social contract.
Right, but in that case, then the Hulkin should be more or less in proportion to the amount that they each had to gain or lose by fulfilling their half of the contract. Meaning if I'm the person who doesn't want to go through contract, I have the wine, I say, well, I have my wine here. Well, the question is, well, how much more would I prefer to fulfill the contract over having that person just get the money they already has? What's that value difference?
Yeah, that's interesting. You're saying
that's the true one. It's not true Hulkin, it's a percentage of the cut.
So that's an interesting way of thinking about it. I saw Yakir has a smile, so... you weren't smiling at it? Oh, he's going to have to write something in. Nope, we still don't hear Yakir. We'll have to find out what Yakir thought later. Alright, yeah, Adam, I think that's an interesting point. I can't respond until Yakir gets his voice in here, so... But definitely strikes me as like an interesting suggestion that the equilibrium should be determined by like the weight that each party has in... on his side or his reasons for performing or not performing. Yair, where do we find you today?
Today is Easter Island.
Easter Island?
Easter Island, yeah, the big head statues.
Where's that?
It's in the Pacific. Cool. Near Australia, but...
Maui.
Sorry?
I think it's called Maui. I think those are what the statues are called.
Maybe think about different Pacific Islanders, but in any case.
How did you end up there today?
I'm trying to go further and further east to counterbalance the Western European thought of my seminars.
There you go.
So at some point I'll hit Hawaii and we'll come full circle.
Right.
Yeah, so two notes, I guess. The first note, which is just obvious in this idea, just worth being explicit, and, you know, it's a broader, like, mumminous issue, is that I think the rule of Hosni Nechmeir Lamaraya is framed as like, you know, in the absence of one party being in a better position, we leave the money where it is because we don't want to make a decision. That, yeah. Based on this, doesn't work. There seems to be some other, at least some overriding principles put into the conversation. Like,
meaning you're saying the meta question of when we default to Hosni Nechmeir Lamaraya and when we default to Yachloku.
Right. So just like that's a broader moment of issue. The more local question is that the rush is building on this idea that in a contract, a party...
It's an important point that we'll get to later because we'll see in Makas Medina, at least the Ravan thinks that Yachloku is the rule of the day or some variation of Yachloku. Right. So that's pretty important. Yeah. So sorry. Second point.
Yeah. The second question is just the rush appeals to this notion of parties in a contract being able to, you know, push off who has to go first if there's some kind of sequence to the performance. Are there rules about that in general? Forget the Nazikin case, right? I sign a contract to, you know, be your, you know, trying to make a good example. Whatever, this contract, right? Is there a principle at play that tells us who needs to go first before the regular fulfillment of the contract?
I mean, like, who has to make the first move?
Right, the rest is appealing to these notions. Do they exist? Do we have information about them?
Yeah. I'm trying to think, when would it generally be relevant in an agreement?
Even in this case, right? Like, before I schlep my wine out here, I want to know that you're serious about sending your boat. So,
right.
You know.
Right.
Right. By the Russians' logic, contracts would be harder to start. Someone needs to take the first lead.
Right, it's interesting. You know, it's like
the point is they agree to.
Right, so my question is just, are there general rules about doing that, right?
Right.
I definitely want to ship on your ship, but I don't want to leave my wine out in the parking lot waiting for your ship to get there because you
right.
didn't show up yet.
Right, not that I'm aware of. I have this issue with, like, Uber drivers. But you can imagine it with doctors also. You know, it's like, I'm not reserving you a spot until I know that you're going to show up here, right? And the guy's like, I'm not showing up.
I'm going to wait an hour and a half in the waiting room.
Exactly. And then I have this issue with, like, Uber drivers, like, when I used to do the commute on the Northeast Corridor from Philadelphia to New York, when the world was functioning. So the issue was, like, I want to order a car that's going to get me to Philadelphia 30th Street, like, in time to get my train. But, like, you want the guarantee that the car is going to get you there in time before you order him. All right. But if he's not going to show up in time, then I'm going to cancel on him and get a different car. Maybe that's not a good example, but
same. It's just called risk.
Well, that's what you're talking about, right? Are there general rules for, like, who has to be committed first? In our Gemara, we arrive at this stalemate because that can't be that understanding can't be reached.
Right. Like,
is the point. That is part of the point of, like,
the equal.
I mean, that's the point of strikes me as, like, the point of the value of the, that is what the price is supposed to
be. Of a contract.
You know, like, when you pay your Uber right, when you pay the Uber driver, part of what you're paying him for, or part of what's built into the price of the Uber is the kind of history of getting the job done, right?
Yeah, it's interesting.
And you know, that's, and part of the reason he's taking your money is because he, you know, credit card companies are going to guarantee that it gets paid and everything like that. So anyway,
it's priced in.
Yeah. Thank God for prices.
Yeah.
It's the most important thing in the world, almost, except for human life.
That's right. See, Cole, you can tell Cole's like a good Hayekian.
Convey more information than anything else.
That's right. Although, you know, today, like, I think the people don't think you need markets to convey pricing information because these, like,
how else would you do it?
You just have, like, these data machines like Google and Amazon that have, like, a better sense of, like, what people are willing to pay without, like free market, like, market systems. So, like,
the only way to tell if somebody's willing to pay is if they pay it. Expressed willingness to pay is not willingness to pay.
Yeah, I don't know. Not sure. All right. So let's look at this Chazanish. Oh, I want the Ramban and Bamin Tziayin Tess makes a similar point to the Rush. He says, V'daminim b'sfina stam v'yayin stam chokin, davka b'she'ein echa mehem rotze lahashlim, aval ze mevi yeno v'ze eino mevi sfina sam nasa nami ito. So the Ramban is pretty clear that if one of the parties actually does move forward in the stam case, he takes all, and the other party loses. I'm a little puzzled, actually. Maybe I'm missing something in the Rush. When the Rush said that the other party could respond and say, "Hey, I'm not making the first move until you make your first move, because I don't want to be tereach u'mafsid mo'osai b'chinam." According to this reason of the Ramban, which the Rush also adopts, that wouldn't be true, right? Because if you make the first move and the other party fails to move forward with you, you would take all, right? So you wouldn't be mafsid mo'osach b'chinam. No?
No, you'd be compensated for the loss, but you would lose the value of shipping your wine from your vineyard to the docks.
You wouldn't get the full, meaning you'd be reimbursed, but you wouldn't get the actual job done. Is that the idea?
Right, you'd have lost money relative to your start.
You still have extra tircha or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got it. Okay, that's a fair point. The Chazon Ish and Bava Kama Simon Chav Gimel Yud Gimel, I think, qualifies this whole discussion. And since Cole is commenting on my meta commentary on the history of halacha today, I'll just note that this is a good example of the Chazon Ish really altering the kind of course of the sugya, almost like acting like a rishon. You could see he just has these important like qualifications and like how the principles that the rishonim list, like the principles the rishonim are stating should be interpreted. So if you read the Rosh and the Ramban, you get the sense that the moment one of the parties moves forward in a stam-stam case, that party takes all. Chazon Ish says that's not generally true. So he quotes the Rosh, Hevi Sfina v'zeinu mevi nosin l'schar mishalim. V'efshar she'ein divrehem ela b'yeshlo l'socher yayin harbe. V'im yayin zenitba adayin yeshlo tzorech l'sfina l'yayin acher. V'gam hasafon yada she'yesh l'socher od yayin. V'hasocher toin be'emes she'socher sfina stam l'yayin stam. She'yodeya she'yesh me'oraos be'olam. V'yuchal l'hizgalgel she'yeh tzorech l'sfina acheres l'yayin acher. V'hashta ki nitba ritzono sheyolich lo yayin acher. So what the Chazon Ish here is doing is he's saying that we shouldn't interpret the Ramban and the Rosh as making like formal legal arguments, that because it's stam stam, I have the legal leverage to force you to move forward if I'm willing to move forward and force you to pay for the whole job. The Chazon Ish thinks that this idea of the Ramban and the Rosh would only apply if the party who's moving forward has a genuine need to move forward. So it's not like, hey, I hired you to transport my yayin stam, and because of that legal technicality, I could quickly buy new wine to force you to complete the journey. The Chazon Ish thinks that wouldn't work. Rather, it's got to be like, I genuinely have like many barrels of wine that genuinely need to be shipped across the Atlantic. And when the boat goes down, I still genuinely need this service. And that's what gives me the legal power to compel you to move forwards. Aval, ima socher modesh she'ein lo tzorech b'holachas yayin acher, v'lo hishtada lohavi yayin rak de lihipater min hamaskir, mipnei she'yodeya she'ein lo svin acheres, lav klumu. If this is just like legal gamemanship, then the Chazon Ish thinks that it wouldn't work. So I thought that, and he says, "Vinishardino ki yayin stam v'sfina stam." He thinks then. Let me see if I got this right.
This is like a very religious comment.
Yes. Yes, it almost sounds
like this is like, you know, it's I yell at night. It's I yell at night to pick a movie, and she picks the one that Noam least likes.
Right, exactly. Exactly. This sounds almost like a musser, like, a musser schmooze.
Right, I was gonna say, it's like don't be mean.
But what's striking is that the Chazon Ish isn't saying it as a musser schmooze, right? It sounds like he's saying it as interpretation of the legal principle at work here. Right, he's talking about like what legal power you have, not like what the right thing to do in the situation is. So I thought this is interesting. Let's make sure I get this right. Yeah. I thought this is an interesting contrast to what we saw in the discussion in the Yad Ramah and the tour about two chaburas ago. Remember there was this question whether are you allowed to switch the merchandise on the boat owner if, you know, the boat didn't sink. And the Ramban and some Rishonim said, yeah, of course you can't. The only significance of Stam, Zeh, whatever, is in the case it sinks, then you could use it to your advantage as, like, to give you the legal upper hand. And it strikes me that this Chazon Ish is, like, directly opposed to that idea. Because there, the Rishonim are saying that all this is kind of like a legal advantage issue. And the Chazon Ish seems to be saying that these claims only work if they're not interpreted as like petty legal advantages, but rather like substantive wants and needs that you genuinely need to fulfill. Donnie, you have a hand? You're muted.
Yeah. I'm in the Chazon Ish, I don't think we talk about this so much, but when did the according to Kozenish, when did the contract end, meaning the original contract end? Like, is it when the boat sinks and now, like, now you have certain obligations, but the contract doesn't have, meaning, because, like, by the like, literal, like, text of the contract, I could bring anyone I want. It's Yain Stam. So, like, what changes that the contract gets, like, kind of, like, the weight of the contract is not there?
Right. Anybody have an answer? Anybody want to weigh in on...
Who says that the contract's not in force? Right? I'm just fulfilling the contract now.
No, but the thing is, in the Cousin Ish's case, that I don't really... Like, in any other contract, do I care, like, where I'm getting the wine from? Or, like, what if I really... Like, if I really need to do it? Like, you don't care about that. Like, the other party doesn't care about your motivation, really.
I'm not sure I follow your point here.
I think what Donnie's saying is, like, the Chazanish seems to be drawing this arbitrary line. It's like Yayin Stam that I have right now. And if the point of the, and if this is the, if I say Yayin Stam, because I'm a clever guy, and I learned my Papa Mitzia, but the truth is, this is the only wine I have in the world, then I, you know, it's, maybe it's true in theory that, you know, the wording of the contract is broad enough that I'm not holding things up. But as an empirical matter, I am holding things up, or at least I have no need to press the matter. Pariah, I don't have any other wine to supply to fill in for this stump. So I think Donnie's point is, like, you know, be that as it may, you know, that's an interesting empirical point about the but why should it matter for who has liability for the contracts not being fulfilled now that I just happen not to have any more wine in my cellar?
No, the Chazanish doesn't talk about whether you have wine, right? He talks about a case where you would even bring wine just to say, look, I brought wine, he didn't bring a boat.
No, but I think that's part of the idea. The idea is that the wine that's relevant within the set of barrels that you can supply to fulfill your side of agreement is somehow, like, set by the signing of the contract, as opposed, which seems arbitrary. Like, why should there be, like, a particular set of wine barrels that is available to you to fulfill your half of the agreement? A contract's a contract.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you want to respond, or...?
No, that was a good articulation of the question.
Okay. By the way, I want to commend Gabe for giving us a view of his nice backyard. He brought us back inside, but we had the nice Cleveland outdoors for a little bit. So, thanks,
Gabe. It's a funny thing, actually. I just wrote this. I just got responses from two editors. I wrote this, like, book review about highly technical analytical philosophy. And my editor was like, you know, you're very casual and snappy, and it's like, it's a nice thing. And then I just wrote this other piece for a popular publication, and the response was, you write so abstrusely, nobody can understand a word that you say. I have like a fakerta cup.
See, you have to mix with your own kind. That's the problem, right?
No, that is the issue.
Yeah.
That is the issue.
Yeah. Okay, so let's take a look at, I want to get just two more formulations in about the Stam-Stam-Zez-Zez distinction. So the Ritva, Ayin Tassam et Aleph, and the Miyuchas Lo. We haven't really spent so much time in the Miyuchas Lo Ritva since today's History of Halacha Day.
Is that Kreskes?
Not Kreskes, but we don't know who wrote it, but the Miyuchas Lo, it's Provençal. So it's like someone in the school of the Ravid.
Ivan.
Yeah, so you can see actually here he quotes the Ravid a lot. I think I heard, like, the way that we know that it's Provençal is because he says, like, Maisa Haya Be'irenu, and there's a Meiri who tells, like, the same story, and the Meiri says where it happened in Provence. Like, that's how they figured out where this thing was from. So the Chidushei Ravid here in the the Miyuchas L'Ritva here quotes the Ravid. Quotes our sugya, and he says the Nasan Lo Yitol rule, and in Lasan lo yitain is lo mishkachas lo el biyayin ze visfina sta visfina zu. So in the ze ze case. And because hay amar li havli svinta, hay amar li havli chamra, you're at, like, neither party could perform. Hilkach, when neither party could perform, each party is in default. Hilkach man de tafis tafis, the person who has tfisa is secure. Shekol echad muchzak b'tainaso, each one has a winning taina, right? And v'tfisaso yisera al cheskasam shel tainasam. So, like, both parties have winning tainas, but one party has the winning tfisa, right? Which, like, is super added to the valid claims that both parties have. So you think both parties have claims, but then yoser al tainasa, one party has tfisa. So when you have, like, two valid claims, but only one valid tfisa, tfisa wins. That, he says, is in contrast to the following idea, to the stam case, of alusvina stam yain stam, nosin lo chatzi scharo, bein nasan, bein lo nasan, mipnesha adayin heim omdin bisafik, right? So, like, we're in this point of uncertainty. Ze im yavi svinaso, vze im yavi yayin. And because, like, we just don't know whether one party will move forward, right? Neither party's in breach. Both parties could move on. Therefore, tfisas hamos lav tfisahu klal. Shadayin biyadam lahotzi ze miyad ze. Im ze yavi svina vize lo yavi yayin. So his point is that neither party is really, has a valid claim. Because both parties could... Or I say either party could always compel the other to move forward. Hilka chavlu mamon hamutal b'safe kol eis v'cholken. And that's why we're in this kind of deadlock, and we should have to do yachloku. So what do you guys think of this distinction? I mean, it's pretty interesting. He seems to be saying that tfisa only works when it's accompanied by a winning claim. A winning taina, and you could only have a winning taina in the zu ze case. You can't have a winning taina in the stam case because the other party could always defeat yours by making you move forward. What do you guys think of that distinction, Yoni? What do you think of the distinction?
It kind of sounds a little bit akin to like Yakir's point about like the equilibrium.
Yeah,
it sounds in the sense that it's like there in the case of stam. Like, neither tfisa counts because they both can just fulfill it. So there's, like, some type of, like, equilibrium that has to happen. That's why it's Holken.
Yeah, maybe. Akira, is that consistent with your equilibrium, with the form in equilibrium?
I don't know if you can hear me now.
Yes, we hear you loud and clear.
Excellent.
Not only do we hear you, we also hear Ami doing his karate chops in the background.
I'm not sure if it's exactly the same thing. But this seems to have more finality about it, like the way he
right. Right. It sounds like it's I think what's a little different about it, Yoni, is that he throws in all this jargon about, you know, good tfisa, good taina, tainas with tfisas, right? It sounds like very like cheskas habatimi, you know, kol chazak asheni mataina, you know, things like that. And maybe that's doing more of the work than just this is a rational solution that, you know, it's in the interest of both parties. You hear that, Yoni, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's not exactly the same thing. I guess the Kira's formation more is more about the most, you know, equitable solution or equitable and logical solution to like a quagmire we have. But I think here it's more about, I agree, I think here it's more about that aspect of like the thesis mattering.
yeah,
being a factor. I didn't understand, but I think it's a similar aspect in that because, I mean, he's addressing a similar question, like why is there no, similar question at the Rush, like why there's no Moti Mechaber Arai relative here. And effectively, the argument is you can't do that since both parties can still fulfill their part of the bargain.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just, so I think on that ground, he's that similar to the Foreman equilibrium.
Yeah. The Pisei Choshen we saw already, we saw his in this footnote here. The Pisei Choshen offered us this distinction where he said, in Sfina Zu v'yayin zeh, hametzius kvar muchletes, sheshneihem einam yecholam makayim atanai, ve'eino omeid lehizbarer od, v'lechein amirin amotz mechavir olav araya. Right, so if there's like no further information that could resolve the case, he's thinking, then we'll say Amotzi Mechaber Olav Araya. Aval b'sfina stam v'yayin sam sheshteim adayim yecholin l'kayim atanai v'adavar taloi v'omeid shem yizkayim atanai ein achaluk ala kematza b'inayim ad sheizbarer. And he thinks for some reason that leads to yachloku as a principle. Anybody have thoughts on the Pisei Choshen? We had seen this earlier. But for him, it's about like whether the chaluka yichola, whether the there's like some further information that would resolve the issue, which distinguishes the cases. Cole, you missed the most Bava Basri part of the discussion in the right. What's that?
What was it? Go ahead. Yeah, what was it?
Gabe, you want to give him the 30-second rundown? Like haratzachta v'gam yirashta, you get to have your vacation and you get to be brought back up to speed on what you missed.
Right. So what was it? Yeah.
Gabe, are you offering to?
Sure. So the relationship between tainos and tfisos that when the mutlas or itzla says that in order for I don't
know,
I have a clear articulation.
Either way,
why don't you?
You're sending it back to me?
I'm back.
Does this tfisaso mean like self-remedy?
No. He just means that when each party has a like a winning claim, then their tfisa is significant. So in a zezu case, where like you have a good claim that the other party's in default, then tfisa is like yesera alches kasam, right? So like you have a good taina with tfisa that works. But in
Tfisa in this case referring
to? The person who has the cash. The person who's holding up, the person who has the money in their possession of the money.
Oh, I see.
But he's saying in a stam case where neither party has a good claim, neither party could accuse the other of being in breach, right? Because the other party could still move forward. He says, well, there's lav tfisa, tfisa samos, lav tfisa hu klal. It's like a chazaka without a taina. And so like tfisa becomes insignificant when it's not accompanied with a good taina. Therefore, it's mamana muta besafek v'cholkin.
Yeah, this is why Migo Lahotzi doesn't work against a chezkas chiyuv.
Yes, yeah, you're the Baba Basra guy this year. So you're like, you know, you could.
By the way, the worst comment I've ever read of the Rambans. It's depressing. Ramban says that Amigo Lahotzi works, and his two rayas are where there's a chezkas chiyuv on the side of the Amigo Lahotzi. It's terrible.
Oh, that's such a Baba Basra issue. All right.
Wouldn't have made it through first round of editing.
We got to check, see if like the Ritva and the later Chachmei Sfarad keep it or get rid of it. That's usually the litmus
test. I think the Ramban is like, it's a good point. Are there like obvious... Have there people done the history like bad svaras in the early Chachmei Svara that
Get refined. They get refined through like from the Ramban to the Rashba to the Ritva.
All we need to read are the Ran and the Tashbates. We really know and we know what to think.
So look here, that's really the distinctions that the Rishonim draw. Let's just spend a few minutes talking about this issue that the Rishonim raise. When we say Cholkin, that in the Stam case they split it. So what are they splitting? Are they splitting the money that was paid? Are they splitting the schar for the first half of the journey that was completed? Or are they splitting the schar of what would have been paid had the journey be completed? So this is, of course, is Machlokas Rishonim. The Rivam is Mesupak about it. The interesting thing is, remember, the Rivam was of the Shita, you could see here in Tosna and Tassim and Beis, that in a Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh case, you only pay for half the journey, right, against the view in the Rishonim of the Ran and the Rif that you pay for the full journey in the Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh case. But the Rivam himself is Mesupak in the Stam case. When we say Chokin, are you Cholik the Schar of Chatzi HaDerech Shehalach, meaning you're only paying a quarter of the journey, or are you paying half of the full journey, meaning you're paying 50%? Does everybody see that? 50% of the whole fare. So the interesting point here is that the Rivam, although in the case of Svina Stam Yayin Zeh, he acknowledges you only pay for half the journey, he's mesupak whether the chulkim of Stam is chulkim schar chatzi haderech shehalach or schar kol haderech. So like, what should determine the answer one way or the other? By the way, I'll just point out, Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz on Ayin Tesa Mebeis is explicit in holding that that in a Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh case, you pay the full schar. Sorry, he quotes Rashi, or he quotes the standard view as holding that in a Stam. And this first half makes sense, right? In a Sfina Stam Yayin Zeh case, you would pay the schar kol haderech. That's Rashi, the Rif, and the Rambam. But in a Stam case, you're cholek the chatzi shelo halach, meaning you definitely have to pay full for the part that was traversed. What you're splitting is the schar of the part that wasn't completed. Okay? The Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz himself says, v'lo nehira, and he says that in a Sfina Stam Yayin Stam case of Cholkin, it's also chatzi shehalach. Shetainas kolachad ve'echad gerua. See, there are really three shitos here when it comes to what it is that you're splitting in the Cholkin case. Are you splitting the schar of the first half of the journey? Are you splitting the schar of, meaning basically that the Baal Hayayin gets the better deal, right? He's only paying 25%. Are you cholik the schar of the second half? Meaning the Baal HaSfina gets the better deal. He gets 75% of the wages. He only loses a quarter, meaning half of what wasn't traversed. Or are you cholik the schar of the entire journey, meaning you just pay 50%? Let me just see. We have okay, yeah. We lost Gabe. Anybody have thoughts on this question? I'll just point out the Sma in Siman Shin Yud Aleph Kuf Zayin, Siman Sifkatan Zayin, has an interesting observation. He says...
also got the Drisha.
Yeah, exactly. Also Bala Drisha. We got the Drisha. Oh, I thought I had the Drisha here, but I didn't. Oh, here's the Drisha, yeah. Shin Yud Aleph. He says, in Shin Yud Aleph Sifkatan Zayin, he says, al kol panim cholken haschar kivan she'ein amol cheskasha shalchad min hon. And then he says, oh, did I? I think I copied the wrong. Oh, no, wait. Okay, I copied the wrong part of, I thought it was supposed to be Shin Yud Aleph Zayin. Here, I'll pull this up. Oh, yeah. Yeah, sorry, I do have it on there. It's, he says, they split the schar. He says, Hachanami nomar le'inyanim holichu pachos otfei mechatzi haderech. suppose the Svina, like, you know, only traversed a quarter of the route, or it traversed like 75% of the route. So it's not like the boat went down exactly midway, just traveled some distance. He says he still thinks you would split it directly in half. So if you were going to pay $100 for the whole journey, it's not that the schar is apportioned based off how much you did, and then you split the half that wasn't done, which seems to be how the Rishonim, the Tosafot Sabina Peretz, was looking at it. He says, no, you'd still split the schar, even if you went pachos or tfei mechatzi haderech. It's kind of just like an interesting, like, both parties are in equal position here. Neither is at fault, neither is in breach. And so the rule just is, you split the entire schar of the journey. But then he says, Miyu eno mukhra. It's interesting. He walks it back a little bit. He says it's not, like, obvious. It's not clear whether this rule is prorated to how much of the journey was completed, or whether it's just an absolute principle of splitting the entire schar in half. Zolt, you look like you might have thoughts on this.
I mean, I'm still kind of thinking through it, but I think, and we saw a bit of discussion before about, like, whether the whole discussion about the first half, the second half, like, what were you completed? We had, like, all, that was, like, there was, like, a lot of discussion about that. But I think the more, in this context, the more you think it's, like, about the tainas not really being fulfilled, like, being a parish version or, like, the Rivid, the more you're going to be thinking about the full journey, because you're not going to have the full, like, neither person has fulfilled, like, the full contract, so you're kind of splitting the full thing. While you're talking about, like, more of, like, a rush type theory, which is, like, some version of, like, some type of equilibrium, potentially, or, like, you know, or more, like, maybe more like a riff, there may be more of a chance to talk about, like, focusing on specifically the journey has been accomplished.
Yeah. Which, this is, like, close to Adam's point of, like, almost, like, the specific value that each person had on the line, right? Whether that's relevant. And you could see this is going even further than that and saying, like, hey, maybe even, like, the amount of service provided is not relevant when we talk about Yachloku. Right, Zolt?
Yeah, a little bit, I think. Yeah, I think when you talk about, like, the tainas, it's almost like you obviate everything that's been done until now. It doesn't really matter. All that matters is that you split the full potential amount.
Yeah, yeah. Good. Let's make one last hara in this discussion. If you look at the drisha in Shin Yud Aleph, as Cole reminds us, same as the sma. You can see this was, like, the trend. You would write a commentary on the tour to show that you, like, kind of went through the stuff be'in. And then you'd write your, like, legal upshot on the Shulchan Aruch, right? So it's like the Rama did that in the Darkei Moshe on the tour, and then the Drisha did it. So that's the thing to do. So the Drisha here in Shin Yud Aleph writes, he's trying to explain the suffix of the Rivam. Like, what's the issue here? What does this question turn on about whether we're splitting the first half of the journey or the second half of the journey? And so he says, V'tam sfeiko nira, take the background fact that in Svina Stam Yayin Zeh, according to the Rivam, you're only paying for the first half. Right, that was the Rivam's view. So if you're only paying for the first half in a Stam Zeh case, Imkain, V'yayin Stam, V'gamhu yachal l'kayim t'na'o, V'ein shem echad mekayim t'na'o, l'havi l'faneinu, Mishum hachi kamar de cholken beoso schiros, haroi litain lo, de hainu hachetzi, ve ein no sein lo ala revius. So, on the one hand, you might say that in a stam, in a yayin stam sfina ze case, the baal ha. So, what changes from a sfina stam yayin ze? To Svina Stam Yayin Stam, right? So the Stam Zeh case, you're paying for 50% of the journey, the part that was traversed. But he's thinking that maybe the Stam Stam case is worse for the Baal HaYayin because here he's also in breach. By...
How does it make any sense?
He's saying, B'yayin stam digam hu yachol l'kayim tano.
It's a good thing.
You would think it's a good thing, right? And the sugyot generally is a good thing. Here he's saying it almost as like a bad thing. Yes,
you... There were downs to his credit. How could it possibly be a bad thing?
Yeah.
Digam v'in shema. He just gets the case wrong.
This is very strange, right? This is the first time someone's trying to suggest that stam is like makes you worse off, right?
No. Itamar, I don't think he's saying it's bad though. He's just explaining why it's chokin. I don't think he's saying it redounds to his.
So I'm saying the gam hu yachol lekayim tno, vein shem.
Yeah, vein shemecha bekayim. That's not. There's no. There's nothing pejorative. I don't think. Maybe I'm misreading.
Maybe his point is that like they're like equally in like the same. Like they're just like in equal position.
Don't ride that yachol too much.
Right. So maybe the point here is just like, hey, like if like in one party,
this is anything new here.
Right. Yeah. Meaning, if one party's totally at fault, then you pay for half. But if they're in equal position in this relationship, then you pay for half of that. Right. Something like that. But then he says, "O nema," or you'll say, "Kim dakol panim holichu chatzi haderech, v'gam hu muchan lekayim tano." Tzarech liten lo tzchiro shel kol ma sheholicho. Uve'im kvar ki... Yeah.
Was it the Mara Merutenberg or the... somebody said the Bridge of Kazadum Svara. Bringing everybody up to date. This is the reason why you have to pay the guy maybe for the donkey.
Right. Ilu bias lamegar ad hafi.
Right, exactly. But so there's a Maharam Rutenberg or a Ravan that you included that like literally say to distinguish the ship case from the house case and the donkey case. The house case and the donkey case. It looks like you do have to pay half.
Right.
You have to play. You have to pay for whatever you've gotten out of it. He says like. Sunk ship back to square one. You haven't advanced things at all.
You haven't gotten anywhere. But here he's saying, "But kibin dal kapanim holichu chatzi haderech v'gam hu muchan lekayim tano tzarech liten lo schiros." I think what he's trying to say here is that look, the boat owner is in a better position. Is that right? I guess he brought you halfway. Yeah, I think his point is that there's never a reason to... exactly, Cole, you're right. Right? Meaning this is the argument that there's never a reason to give the boat owner less than half the journey, less than the value of the journey that he brought you, since he did provide this kind of a service. Yeah.
Right.
I think this drisha doesn't really actually shed so much light on this... back and forth.
I don't think it's anything new.
But look at this. This last line is what's important here. He says, "Uve'im kvar kibel kol haschiros, beze lo kasvu dinestape grivam, ela sfir le degam beha ein sarach lahachzir lo klum." This is a shocking statement from the Drisha. He says that, and this is really contrary to what we've seen until now. Until now, we've been assuming that prepayment only matters in the Zezu case, the Zuzet case. But if there was prepayment in a Stam case, you'd be forced to...
What do you mean the Zezu case?
Sfina Zu, Yayin Zeh.
You mean both, where they're both specific?
Yeah. Right, until now, the...
Lots of people have said that prepayment counts in the other cases, I think.
So the standard is that prepayment only really matters for... Because remember the Gemara said...
I think it's a systematic machlokas in all of these cases about prepayment.
Well, I'll just remind you, Claude, the Gemara said that in the Svina Stam Yayin Zeh, that even if you didn't pay yet, you have to pay. And in
it doesn't Svina, say it doesn't. I don't think it says anything about timing of payment.
Well, it does, because it says im nasan yitol, right? Meaning if you paid, you get it back, right? But what's striking here is that the Jerisha says, in a stam case, im kibel kol aschirus, you wouldn't have to give anything back, which is quite striking. I thought the standard view is that chulkin means even if it was prepaid, you'd have to disgorge some of it. But the Drisha thinks that's not true. The Drisha thinks that having to give back money that was prepaid only applies to the stam ze or zu stam cases. But when the parties are an equal, either stam stam or zu zu, then prepayment would still matter. Yoni, you have a hand?
Yeah, I was going to say about the first part of the Drisha. I mean, we can focus on the second part, but the first part of the Drisha also seems to me rather, like, unintuitive, especially where he suggests, at least within the suffix, that part of the suffix would be that you pay the full amount of what you've already done.
Yeah, the second half,
which is not the same, which is not probably shot in what, like,
Chalukah means.
That means.
Right.
The Chalukah probably means you pay the half of the full amount, not pay whatever, you know. Nafkamina would be like a very clear one. If he only went a third of the way, he didn't go half, or he went, you know, two thirds of the way. So according to the Drisha, you get two thirds, you get one third, and not, you wouldn't get half.
Right, exactly.
A very different calculation.
Yes, yes, 100%. Meaning it's not a Yachloka principle, right, on that view. It's literally just under the assumption that you're paying for what was provided.
Right, which is like a very different way of looking at what's happening with Kolkin. Like, it's not.
Right. It's not chulkin, it's like mishalim lamasha kibel or something.
Yeah.
Or like mishalim mavura derech shahalach. Yeah, that's a good point. So this is a little tricky, this part at the end here. I thought this sman shinid aleph, I mean, Yoni, to get to speak to the point that you're making is interesting, because he's thinking this back and forth here, he's not sure. Maybe this is a little bit related to your point, Yoni. He's mesupuk about when you didn't travel a perfect half, are you still paying half, right? In halicho pachos o tfei mechatzi aderech, his first view is to say you still pay half, but then he says miwei namuchra, he backtracks, he's not really sure. All right.
Yeah, very weird to suggest that the Rishon, I mean, I don't see any evidence in Rishon that suggests that half in this context refers to like schar, halicha, and
yeah.
Don't, not like the actual, like a
Yachloku
principle.
Right. Which is what this this thing seems to suggest, right? Let me just go back to the language of the Rivam for a second. Right. Kivan shekvar halach. It's interesting. In Tosos, that language actually does sound a little bit like the way the Drisha is interpreting it, meaning see that, Yoni?
Yeah, is that part of like the reasoning, or that's explanation of what the actual amount is? It's
right,
like
right.
Not very clear.
Right. Well, kivan shekvar halach might be part of the, sounds like it's part of the reasoning. Yeah, it's pretty, it's interesting. I wasn't sensitive to that before. Okay, let me just make one. Give me 1 second here.
Are you going to wrap up in like the next 10 minutes or so?
Yeah, cool. We're going to stop in 10 minutes.